AVN task group.
Should be.
I think AMT was gonna be done at noon, and then he was gonna, which is something you guys first.
Okay. Okay, let's give a couple minutes for Gary.
Did Blaine say he was gonna make? Because I think Blaine's gonna be the new Noah Dallas guy.
But don't they have a new bird guy? Didn't they give some other name for a bird?
Well, there's Blaine Krasno, who's doing bird stuff. But she's at AMT meeting with Gary.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so it is Lynn then.
But I don't know if Lynn is gonna do inland birds. She's mostly doing estuary birds.
Okay.
I don't know how they've broken that out yet. We ought to ask them. They're still trying to figure out who's going first.
Well, I guess it's already 10 afternoon, so we should probably get going on this. Gary can catch up.
I think he's got a good idea of what to do anyways.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, hold on. Do your speaker, though.
Do my speaker.
Please press the talk.
Then turn that one off? Okay.
If they want to hear
you. All right. Okay, so here we go. So as Tom brought up at last FPOM, we're seeing some alarming numbers from Miller Rocks. What I wanted to do is just kind of walk through a little bit of history at the Dalles of, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, how we've dealt with birds and kind of how we ended up where we are now. So, just start out with, for people that don't know or are not familiar with the Miller Rocks colony, it's located almost immediately between the Dalles and John Day Dam. There's between roughly 4,500 and, 3,500 and 6,000 gulls on this island. And they've done several censuses on it, but they don't. There's really not an actual enough to really determine a trend if that's been increasing over the years or not. But it doesn't seem. Just the few that they did take doesn't seem real consistent.
So I have a question: is it currently submerged?
Currently, no.
Okay.
Nope.
Blue Ox is the one you're thinking of.
Well, driving down here today, I thought it was Miller Island, but I saw no rocks, so that's why I wanted to ask.
Okay, you should be able to see it. It's the big white painted rocks out on the east side of the Miller Island. You'll see on the next slide a little better. Ownership, that's the big question mark. So when we first started looking into this, seeing the high numbers on Miller Rocks, we're saying, okay, well, what can we do? Well, who owns it? Nobody has claimed ownership of the rocks per se. Forest Service apparently owns the island itself, but nobody knows who owns the rocks. So here's an overview. The mast to the left there, that's Miller Island. And then on the east side of Miller Island, just off the tip, you see that's just a little rock outcropping there. That's the problem right there. That's Miller Rocks. That's where all the gulls are nesting. So, as I said, we can't figure out who owns it. So, what to do with it from there, I don't know.
So, are you going to make an effort? I guess that was, I'm kind of late to the game for your task group here. But I did go down and talk briefly with our office counsel, since we had somebody that had worked on inland avian over there as well. And
mm-hmm.
Ownership, so the comments, I went down and I said, well, if nobody owns it, can't we do such and such? And the answer was, somebody owns it, Ann. So that was a kind of a pointed thing to bring here, is we really need to figure out who owns it. I mean, obviously the Forest Service, and I'm sure you've dealt with Dave Trachtenberg and have
yeah.
that email chain.
Yeah.
They did some surveying back several years ago for some other place. I mean, that great place to start with what they did. But our office of counsel felt very strongly that someone does own it, and if we could establish that ownership, I think it opens up the options for you, for developing a plan of attack. And so, to me, that's the most important thing that we should be striving for here going forward. So the office of counsel for us felt that in Portland, we could get that answer by somebody digging and searching here through probably your Portland district office or whomever, that these kinds of records are down here, and that we should really, because I, well, to me, the options open up if we know who's owns it and we want to take actions there. We can ask permission or, you know, a variety of things.
Yes.
The other thing I wondered about, if you don't mind me keeping talking one more minute, is it possible that the reason we're not coming up with anybody owning it is because the surveying was, the timing of the surveying is different than when we may have flooded that area, so that at one time it may have even been part of Miller Island. These are just two things that came to mind, knowing that ownership here is going to be critical to establish.
I know anything's possible on this, but I mean, as far as what we looked into, we were not able to find out who owns it through Portland Real Estate that Trachtenberg was dealing with, and I don't know who that was.
So I think the recommendation is that we have somebody, and I don't know who it would be for you guys. Obviously, I'm different district giving you advice, and you can take it or leave it, but our office counsel felt that getting somebody else digging around in there,
yeah,
that we should be able to establish a better track of ownership. So it'd be really, seems timely, and I don't know who that would be, but I mean,
I
think it would be worth the time because, like I said, you know, a lot of options open up if we know who owns it.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah, well, can I interject as well? Do we know what the water depth is between the rocks and the island? The AM's comment that it may have been part of Miller Island prior to flooding may provide an interesting clue.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was connected at one time before the flooding.
If that's the case, then at that point in time, if the Forest Service owns the island,
which they're saying no,
that would extend to the rocks.
Well, I talked with a couple of the researchers. They did ask the Forest Service for permission to go collect data on there, and the Forest Service said, sure, you can, but they said they didn't own it. So if it's not the Forest Service, it's not the Corps, it's not the Bureau of Land Management, that really only leaves potentially Clickitat County would be the only one, and even they are going, they're not even sure. So while I understand the Office of Counsel say, oh, someone's got to own it, if they do, someone may own it, they may not know it, is what it's coming down to. So I don't know how easy this is going to be to have someone track it down.
But we can't take action. So, I mean, the reason that came up for me was, you know, I said, if nobody owns it, could we do such and such? You know, because this is another effective technique, and they're having a hard time getting, you know, lethal take authorized down there. And the answer, was the reply. So, you know, obviously it's gone on for a couple of years with Drakenberg, so I can understand your frustration, Tom. But I think it might, and I'm not trying to push this off somewhere, but I think it obviously, however we could facilitate getting the answer to who owns it would potentially pave some sort of path forward, because we would have the opportunity then to negotiate to try to have a contractor do something out there.
Well, finding out who owns it would definitely help a lot, but we don't know for sure if that is actually the action. Let's say the Corps did own it. Would the Corps then say, okay, we'll go out there and reduce the habitat or whatever? I don't know if they would do that in this particular circumstance, especially with what's going on with all the other colonies and the work that's being done there.
I think, though, rather than make assumptions based on who owns it of what we might do, obviously, you know, politically driven things sometimes take on their own wings at times. And this
nice on there.
So because of the stone wall that you've run into and trying to do something similar to what Walla Walla District has done with lethal take, and the likelihood of that changing in the near term for you is seemingly nil, I really think that this might be your best alternative for trying to get something going here in the near future. And that, you know,
eat a protein.
I don't know how, you know, being over there, we can help you with that, but I think we, within the Corps, there needs to be someone who takes the time to sleuth this out. And I think it, obviously it starts with real estate and office of counsel. Somebody,
yeah.
You know, you can go at them with, hey, we have this issue here we're trying to address. Nobody's saying they own it. Here's some individuals that have looked at surveys, et cetera, with Forest Service. They don't think they own it. They're saying we have an interest here. Well, it's a matter of paying somebody to do it, obviously. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Tammy's not in here or you're...
Well.
Hey, Alan.
Go ahead.
Maybe there's another way to approach this. What if the Corps or the Forest Service were to identify that they haven't, or we haven't identified an owner, and make a claim on the property and make a public notice and hearing on it, and maybe it goes, maybe the Corps could claim it if no one comes forward.
I don't think the Corps is real excited about claiming it.
No, I'll claim it. Build my summer house.
We were actually hoping somebody else would, but
become a nonprofit, and we could hire you to.
It would make the process easier, and by going through a public process, if nobody claims it,
Canada,
that might be another option.
Yeah, it's definitely an idea, but convincing the right people to say yes to that would be. Another hurdle.
Well, one option you might take is that someone from NOAA might, I don't know, and another buyout might require you to do all kinds of crazy things at the Dalles Dam, and this might be a much cheaper option, and maybe that's the tact we take. We've been dealing with this for 3 or 4 years now, and I've seen absolutely no movement on this, and I'm struggling to think what we could do. Blaine Parker is doing some work, but he's so far not been able to find anything out of what they could possibly do and that kind of stuff. The tribes because we've talked to, he's been making some inquiries from the tribes and see if they'd be interested in looking at this. And right now there's been not much response back, but, and partly it's because of this ownership issue. So, and
it's theirs. It's not,
yeah, I know. Well, the downside is it's probably Yakima's, and Yakima and Klickitat County right now are not actually seeing eye to eye on land issues. So that may not be one
of the best. So the tribes aren't responding, or they just said, no, we're not interested?
They're saying until we get a clearer direction of ownership, or if it came up like Charlie's idea, if it came up that, hey, someone please take this, the tribes would probably be interested. But they're not going to go out and start doing stuff until they get some clearer direction that it's not somebody's or something like that. Just because, I mean, they're right now having a dispute with Klickitat County on some property, so they don't really feel the urge to... stink the bear in
front.
Exactly.
Well, Tom, if you think if we put that proposal out there to claim ownership of it and go through a process, you think that would might be an appropriate way to tackle this?
I have no idea. I like the sound of it, but I am nowhere near the legal expert on this. So maybe that's the way to do it. I don't know.
Well, something I'd like to throw in there, too. We don't even know. Let's say... we did have ownership of it. We don't even know if that's the answer, is to go out and deal with the island. Maybe that is not the answer. Maybe all we would do is just move them somewhere else where we gotta deal with them somewhere else. And that's been shown elsewhere.
That's about everything else that we've done. Nothing's worked so far with the
turns. I would say turns and corners make sense because they basically eat one thing, salmon. Gulls have, they're a bit more like a me or a bear and are much more opportunistic.
Yeah.
And so if we could get them somewhere where there's other food sources, they may not be doing that. But the problem is, how do we ensure they go somewhere there's other food sources that are not in danger of salmon?
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, I'll just say what I think they would do.
Yes, turn it on so Charlie can hear you.
I really, really doubt that these birds will head up. I mean, they'll go wherever there's abundant food source. And there's plenty of islands for them to colonize up and down the Columbia, so I'm not so sure that they would head out someplace.
You're saying Wonder Bread at Bob's house isn't going to be the key?
Well, if Bob provided
French fries.
Loaves and loaves of Wonder Bread and French fries, that's Bill Hevlin's idea, I think, from years ago.
That's how old I am.
Actually, we tried that.
We'll feed them.
We tried that once before, John Day, I remember.
So
that would work.
We purchased a bunch of French fries.
It's a small enough island that I wonder that if in fact we knew who owned it and we could go on there, whether our lethal program could provide effigies that could actually be hung on there. And I've been told by the folks that do the bird control up at the Seattle airport that effigies can be very effective. And so, you know, a dead bird or two hanging on these rocks just might help clear them off, you know.
Or the scary man.
The scary man, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, honestly, it's simple, and it's really just a matter of having the permission to go out there and do something.
Yeah.
I'll just add that there are you know, several other gold colonies nearby that aren't on the river. They've chosen other habitats off river that seem to be more preferential to them, and they also have a much lower percentage of recovered pit tags, you know, on those islands. So,
and I guess if we don't have permission, we can always beg for forgiveness.
One of the things I wanted to point out too is
Washington can.
I'm going back one slide to the numbers of gulls that have been counted on this island, 3,500 to 6,000. You would think that there would be a steady increase the more recent numbers we looked at, but just the few counts that were done, it seems to be kind of all over. So we don't know. I mean, let's say we are able to manage the island and reduce the population. Okay, how far do you go with it? We don't know. Anyways,
we won't be able to make that decision anyway, Bob. That'll be Fish and Wildlife Service, right?
Well, if you're doing lethal take, sure. But if you're just like saying, let's just not have gulls nest in the island, that's not an issue. It's not a take. You're just basically doing basically what we do at some of the upper islands, just saying we're going to put hazing and just haze them off and not let them have that island and hope that it's more of a location issue, that just because of their location, they're much more prevalent on salmon.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we'll chase them all to Gary's house, I think.
That would happen.
But given
it would, I mean, we do have clear guidance, or maybe not guidance, but examples at Crescent Island and at Goose Island and the potholes. That, yeah, we can move them off. There's no doubt about that. So it's just where they go is the question, what you do with that.
And that's why you have to do some level of monitoring to figure out where they're going. Because if they go someplace worse than that, we just shot ourselves in the foot, which would not be unusual for us, but we can always hope to miss.
But, I mean, worse is location, right? So it's a matter of having access to fish that are compromised. I mean, we don't have to get, and so by dispersing them, we potentially, just that act alone, could be lightening the hit that we're taking, I would think.
Hope so. That's the reason why.
Which is the whole, because I mean, the path forward of lethal take, even though you haven't got to it yet, seems dead in the water. You've been trying this now for two years.
Well,
sorry, I'll stop talking here shortly. But you know, I mean, while it's at some point in time in the future, maybe that'll become an option for you. At this point, it is not an option. You know, it's from a legal standpoint, you're just not going to be able to go there.
Yeah, just figuring out who owns Miller Rocks was really the first approach we were taking, trying to figure that out, and then even if we could do anything with that. But then really the next approach, which is probably not the best from a public's eye, is lethally removing them at the dam.
Yeah. Do you guys have, in the new NEPA discussions that are going on, is that being included in that? Is NEPA coverage for lethal take? If not, why not?
Well, it's in a few more slides. We're going to talk about that a little more.
Okay.
If we can get to them, but
I guess we should let you
we'll get there.
Two.
Yeah.
Oh, you're
yeah.
All the way to number three, Jesus. So we're doing good.
I got 15 slides here. What time is it? Okay. You guys know all this, I'm sure. You're familiar with the buyout, right, Gary?
Gary, who wrote this?
One of the things I wanted to mention, manage avian predators on core lands. So that's our obviously our problem.
Yeah.
And then continued deterrent efforts, we're doing that to the best we can. Always open to suggestions on that and how to improve that. We're really not sure what more we can do with that. Monitor avian predators, you guys are seeing those numbers in the, we're counting them every day, and then we're putting those in the weekly status reports and then also putting out the annual report. And smolt impacts, which is something that's bringing us here now because that's what we're seeing. I don't know if I, I guess some of you don't know all the history of how we got to where we are now as far as dealing with the gulls. Back in the day, Tom and Gary probably remember this, back in 95 when USDA was basically shooting gulls 12 months out of the year and shooting instigator gulls 12 months out of the year, which meant to them any gull in shotgun range.
Or anything else.
Yes, and everything else too. You know, they were, it just wasn't, yeah, it wasn't gulls. It was pretty much everything. Anyways, then there was a, you guys probably remember there was a point there where we saw the numbers from USDA and we're like, wow, that's a lot of gulls. We need to put some kind of restriction. So we had just an arbitrary no more than six gulls a day, no more than four cormorants a day was like their bag limit. And then we ran into NEPA, and when the question was asked, what do you have in place for doing this? And the Corps had nothing, and USDA had nothing, and U.S. Fish and Wildlife, who gave the permit to USDA, had nothing. And so then we, Walla Walla, frantically put something together, yay together, for both Walla Walla and Portland, which didn't fly, so to speak. And then we ended up with no lethal after that, for the most part. So, you guys know this too, avian lines, limited effectiveness. The hazing that we're doing right now, 3.5 months out of the year, also limited effectiveness. It does work, but to a point, and it's all extremely flow dependent. You have a low flow year, hungry gulls, and they're on a hot spot, it doesn't work. You need more. We know that. This is what our avian line grid looks like at the Dells, with the exception of the East Powerhouse. We just recently removed those because of that shock hazard that we had talked about from the induced voltage on the power lines. So that is now out, but we'll continue to monitor that, and if the gulls do show up there, we'll put them back up, but I don't foresee a problem there. Our main problem is just below the spillway. And we got, so the two grids below the spillway, you can see the one downstream of the bridge. That one, we've been trying to figure out for years how to put lines across that. That's our hottest spot. You agree, Nathan? That's our hottest spot for...
Do you want to use your pointer?
There we go. This spot right there. So that's where we get the heaviest... or the highest gull numbers, the heaviest predation. So now we're able to get to that with hazing. We don't put avian lines out there for a couple reasons. One, just logistically, it's difficult because we really can't, we don't know how to attach here. I mean, we could possibly go from Peninsula over here and run it across to points over here. But the biggest issue is liability, because that is outside the boat restricted zone. So we have a lot of fishermen that hit that. There'll be boats lined up here, and we don't want to be stringing up avian lines over their heads. So that is presently dead as far as trying to put any avian lines up there. And then these were strung right after the spill wall was put in 2010. We used to run these lines from the spillway to the bridge prior to the spill wall. And then we had to take them all down for the construction of the spill wall. And then when we did that and we wanted to put them back up, and ODOT said, nah, we don't really want them attached to the bridge anymore. So then we had to go with this plan and spread them across that way. And these are our most important lines. We lost a couple of those last year and had them reinstalled. Trying to figure out if there's a better way we can line this. And during normal flows, this is usually not a big problem area in here. Usually most of the gulls are down here. But when the flows start to drop off and you get a low flow year, they're right up in here, and they'll come right up inside the spill wall. And they'll be in those lines, and you swear the lines are down, you go down there and they're not. They just know exactly where the gaps are. They figured it out and they're in there working. So that's another challenge for us, but we're always trying to figure out better ways to deal with this. Also, the hazers are out here in the boat, and then the hazers are can also reach pretty well from the peninsula. but it's not quite as effective as being out there at the boat chasing them down.
And you guys are doing single boat hazers now, aren't you?
Yes.
In 2010, you were doing two boat hazers, which was fairly effective, and now you're just down to one boat?
We're at one boat now, yeah. Yeah. There was a short time period there where we didn't have any boat hazing. We just did it off the peninsula,
yeah.
Thinking that it would be just as effective, but it was a little bit less, and you can actually see that in some of the graphs. We crunched the numbers on trying to figure out what the trend is over the last couple decades. And so we did several different ways to look at this. We looked at the daily gull average, and you can see a continual increase as expected. And then you can also notice the, like, 2011 high flow year, very turbid. Gulls are all over the place, just kind of searching, and they didn't seem very effective. And at the dam, we just weren't seeing as many. They dropped, then they came right back. So we looked at it another way, just took a total numbers of gulls that we saw, and 10 and 11 is just an anomaly there. We didn't really have the database for that, so that's not zero. You can pretty much just draw a straight line across there, but we're still seeing that continual increase. And then we tried to break it down this way, just looking at, to fill in that 10 and 11 gap that we had in the last data set. We just looked at, okay, what's the maximum gulls you would see during the week, and we took those numbers, and same thing, increased trend. And then this one, we broke it up just to show all the different ways that we dealt with them in each one of those periods. So back in the day, let's see, here we go, where are we? And this isn't showing up. Let's see the cursor. Anyway. You can see back in the day when we actually used lethal, it seemed to work. There was a time period there where, right around where we went from pyrolethal to pyro, that was the NEPA period when we ran into that issue, so then we went to pyro only. Then there was one year there, you guys probably remember that, where we did nothing because there was something about the wording just said have gull abatement in place or something like that. And so the district biologist at the time read that as, oh, we have avian lines, so we don't need hazing. So we skipped it that year, but then we came back. Then we went to the boat pyro. There was a little bit of lethal, and that lethal that was applied to that was just for fish field unit when they were doing their study for a couple years.
Can you do another study?
Every year.
Yep.
Long year, 10-year study.
And then the last stretch since 2010, we haven't been, this is not accurate, we haven't been boat pyro since 2010. It was actually the first 3 years from 10 to 13 was peninsula based, and then 14 till now has been boat pyro, so you can see a little bit of a difference there. I don't know how significant that is, but anyways, that's it. So I wanted to compare with John Day what they've been seeing. Since we've been seeing the increase, so the question was, are they all coming down here and not going to John Day? So it appears like they had a pretty good decrease, especially right at the beginning, you know, in 2010 when they put in the $7 million avian line grid and the army of hazers out there. Certainly worked for a couple years anyways. Eric, do you know, in 2010, they had a couple boats hazing out there, right? And then they backed...
Yeah, 10 and 11 was 16-hour a day boat hazing.
And then you guys backed off?
Yeah, then we went to 8-hour boat hazing from 12 on.
Okay. So that may be the effect there. All right, past research, Fish Field Unit, they did some work in 9, 10, 11. Nathan, correct me if I'm wrong on any of these things that I'm pointing out. So in 2011, when John Day looked at it, they saw 0.02%. Not bad, but that was total outmigration, all species, not species specific. Obviously, if you're observing from shore, you can't tell exactly what they're taking. And then the Dalles, when they looked at the Dalles, I believe that was the following year, right? It was a couple times, 2.5 times higher than 2011, but still, that's way under 1%. That seems pretty good. And this is why we're here now. So what the OSU, RTR, those guys have been doing, the work they've been doing for the Inland Avian Work Group, these are the numbers we've been seeing. So their goal is less than 2% per colony. Miller clearly is not meeting that goal. But I don't know about you guys, but I was pretty shocked to see these numbers. I mean, we're talking, you know.
The fact that it holds, stays high in 16, I think, is the biggest concern. I mean, with.
Yes.
2015.
2015 was a low flow.
You always, it seems like all the previous data has said that's when you would get the most relief from avian hazing was in those extreme dry years. Obviously, if this is what relief looked like, that's concerning in and of itself. But
yes.
Then to have it continue in 16 at better than 6% or better than 10, you know, that's pretty high.
Yes. So in talking to RTR, one of the things they pointed out was, so like Fisheries Field in it, when they looked at it, 0.02, and then, you know, a little bit more than that for the Dalles, but I mean, it looked acceptable. Why the huge difference? And they were saying, well, species specifics.
Deposition
they,
adjustment.
Yeah.
Much higher than we thought.
So anyways, they recommended dealing with Miller gulls. Right in their report.
Who was that? That was Evans and
yep.
Company.
Yeah.
Is David Trachtenberg on the phone?
He is smart.
Well, that's where this belongs.
So I was trying to look at this and, like, from a big picture, you know, how bad is it? And so we passed BIOP in 10, 11, and 12 when we did the testing. We passed BIOP. But if I was to just see the numbers on Miller from 15 and 16,
you're mixing
and
things up.
I would never, what's that?
You're mixing goals. I mean, the BIOP goal, the 96%, that has nothing to do with the reach. That's the project. That's the project.
Dam only.
Concrete only.
Yep.
It has nothing to do with the gulls.
Yep. But if we didn't do that testing in 10, 11, and 12 and had passed that and had not known that, and if I was just to look at the 15 and 16 Miller Island and knowing the amount where the gulls are going, and evidence seems to show a lot of them are coming to the Dalles, I would never bet that we're meeting the BIOP now. Not with that.
Uh-huh.
Not with right. That number, because it's...
Because of the numbers taken in the tail race.
And it doesn't even account for
other
takes. Bass, pike, minnow, all that. Predation. I mean, this is just looking at birds, and look how high it is. I can't see that lining up.
You don't know where that's coming from. You have no idea where that's coming from.
We're all bird tickets.
That could be a reservoir, it could be a forebay, it could be a tail race,
could
be downstream of the project.
Could be, but in RTR's study, in RTR's report, they said that is the vast majority is taken at the projects. And just seeing the river all the time, I mean, it seems pretty obvious when you see flock after flock flying to the Dalles
right. And
flying up to John Day, and you don't see them out in the river.
But they don't know that either.
No.
So
but we don't.
That's
it's a huge gap. You're right.
That bother me.
You're right.
That's a decently educated guess, though, because they're on the river a lot, and they look at where they're foraging, and most of the foraging time is spent around the dam. So unless their foraging time in the reservoir is ridiculously successful, and they only do it for 5 minutes a day and get like 20 fish,
mm-hmm.
remember that 96 is concrete.
Yeah.
That's concrete.
Oh, I know.
And so the reservoir really? Includes the tail race downstream. Well, it is.
Well, it's.
It is. You know it is.
And we argue.
I know, but it is.
It's concrete. Concrete as in, what, half mile downstream, half mile upstream?
Wherever the release point is for the part two. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is pretty tight.
Yeah.
It's pretty close.
Yeah.
So, it's pretty close, but all the birds that we count in those zones are well within that.
Yep. Yeah, well, you may be right, but that's
yeah.
not being the standard.
But I realize there's data gaps there. I mean, that need to be proven. But
all kinds of squishiness here.
But yeah. it sure makes me wonder if we're
I
making.
I still agree. I mean, yeah. But I don't know where are you going with all this? I guess is the question, because there's two issues here. There's the project level hazing and deterrence, and then there's the overall population of gulls, which is the Inland Avian Management Plan. And if the Corps is suggesting reopening that plan for an overall population reduction of ring-billed and California gulls in the basin, that doesn't belong to O&M. Are you going to bring this to the workshop 2 weeks?
Yep.
Good.
Well, the way I look at it, the Corps they see this as an issue. There's really two ways to do it. You can try to look at it. Do it at the Dalles, keep the birds away from the Dalles.
I think you have to do that.
Or you go after the colony.
I think you have to do that.
I like both, but I'm saying if I was the Corps, I'd say, hey, I bet if we take care of this colony, we want to do it at the Dalles. I'm mixed bag if that would be successful or not, but I'm just saying I can see where Bob's going to say, I've got the problem with the Dalles. I only have so many tools in the toolbox right now.
Mm-hmm.
What's another way to take a crack at this? Look at the colony. And right. Of course, right now we're getting.
I think it's yes and yes, that one, you need to do all you can at the projects to deter avian predation. That's part of the buy-up, probably
yep.
part of the next buy-up.
Hope so.
And that we're seeing that hazing is, and especially boat hazing, is pretty effective. I mean, I've seen that over and over again.
Yep.
So that's expensive, but that's that.
But not effective enough.
Not effective enough. Now, going after the colony, that's not the project's responsibility. That's
right.
A bigger program.
Right.
And that needs to be part of the Inland Avian Management Plan.
Yep.
And it isn't at this point. So that's, that's really where I see this needs to go.
Yep.
Is that direction. And that it needs to be pulled into that NEPA process. And it was dropped. It was left out.
Right.
That process. It
right.
needs to be reopened and reconsidered. And that's
definitely where it needs to be if, in fact, we have to take care of the island.
Yeah, and it isn't going to be just that island, because I fully believe those birds will move to Three Mile Canyon. They'll go up to the islands there, or they'll go on up to the Blaylocks. Those colonies, there's plenty of land there.
Maybe they can push the turns off.
What's that?
Maybe they'll push the turns off.
Yeah. Well, I think they'll probably all live together because there's different habitat.
There's enough room. Yeah.
So I don't think it's simple as just pushing them off a miller and expecting that. It might go away for the Dalles because
mm-hmm.
you'll move those birds out in further away, but it may show up at John Day or
it's somebody else's problem.
Big time.
Yeah.
That's where we would probably see it more than anything. And
yeah.
These birds know that for one, they know fish. French fries would be great, but I think that they're going to be going after the fish, and they know how to fish for fish, because that's what they do, and just pushing them off of the island and expecting them
don't forget, they only fish during the fishing season, so they obviously know how to get other food sources throughout the rest of the year.
They fish the rest of the year.
What are they doing in the December?
They are in the ocean. That's where California gulls go. I go out there and see them every year. There's millions of them out there.
Well, then we'll encourage them to stay out there.
Well, you can try. But that's what they do. They don't head off to some farmer's field and eat earthworms, because that's just not what they're doing. They're going out to the ocean
Ring-billed gulls do stay in, and they're more likely to hang out. But that's not the issue here. Mm-hmm. Ring-bills much lower
California.
Population in California, especially on Miller.
Yeah.
But Miller or California gulls, once it gets into the fall, you can stand on the 205 bridge and watch flock after flock after flock heading west in the late summer, and that's what they're doing. They're heading for the ocean.
I just had a couple of comments that kind of to echo some things that Gary brought up, which is really important to this group, the larger inland avian work group as well, is that as we were going down the path in the inland avian work group and we'd split out the projects from the inland avian work group, the information we had at Miller Island Rocks was that the number of pit tags recovered there was fairly small, essentially insignificant compared to what we're seeing other places. And right. So thus it was prioritized really low. And that was prior to some of the work that RTR had done later on, learning about off-colony deposition and really just how they destroy pit tags in their crop. They've gone back and reworked those numbers, and it lines up much better with what they were seeing with radio tag fish. It, I think, what was the factor? It was eight.
It was a lot.
So every pit tag you discover on the rocks is worth about eight, and you start doing that math, and then you would go back and reprioritize that, they would have ranked. I think they would have made that action. So we ended up doing a lot of actions upriver. We did actions in the Pottles Reservoir with partners up there, but we did never get anything in the lower river because we just didn't know. And so I think it's part of the, I think this group's task is how do we get that back on track?
Well, it was turns only. At the end of the day, for in the Navy, and it was turns only. No gull actions whatsoever, not even upriver. So that was, and you're right, Nathan, that was really the, data were misleading that went into all that. And so, or maybe that's the wrong word, not misleading, but I mean, that's our take on it, was that it was misleading. And it wasn't intentional, it was just
didn't represent what was actually there.
Yeah, I don't mean to suggest it was intentional, it was just that we didn't really understand the magnitude, and now we do. So it is worth, I think, reconsidering that. But it is a big issue. It's not just Miller. It's a big issue that we would have to deal in up and down that.
It might be, but we don't really know that yet, because when you look at all the gull colonies in the basin, Miller Rocks is unique.
If you look at the islands all the way up through Richland area, there are tens and thousands. I mean, they're not taking as many smolts, or at least we don't think they are, but there are very, very large colonies. Bigger than this by probably double.
And they're currently still not taking as many fish, though.
No, they're not.
No.
So of course, we're not looking as close as we probably ought to be either. Yeah. That's what concerns me a little bit.
It could be the unique location of just where the rocks is at, and it's more difficult to get up and out of the gorge and go forage elsewhere.
Well, they're in a city. Right. They're right on the edge of the city, too, so there's other sources of food there. But, hey, Tim. So, I do think, though, that it is a big issue that, when you go after something like this, what we've learned from cormorants and terns is you really got to go after it basin-wide. You can't go after it just one small area.
I just wonder if the gulls, because of what Tom mentioned earlier, having just a more varied diet, might be the exception to that rule. And Miller Rocks would be, if it was going to work, I think this would be the place it would work.
It'd be an interesting try. I just don't ignore the history that we've had so far with moving birds around the basin.
So far, not been so very successful.
So you're asking where am I trying to go with this? I'm just trying to get some attention to it, and I'm not exactly sure what
the best
approach is. Right, I understand. So obviously, if it's Miller Island to do something to manage Miller Island, then inland avian work group, that's where it belongs, absolutely.
In terms of, are we going to make a recommendation to the inland avian from the FPOM? What's the official?
Well, I don't know.
Thing?
It's to determine what's the best path forward on this. Do we try to push to deal with them on Miller Rocks, or do we try to do something more at the dam? Do we try to get lethal removal at the dam?
One, two, three. I see three things. One, get lethal removal at the dam. Two,
improve your deterrence at the dams, and three, petition the Inland Aving Group to reconsider belts. And that's your 1-2-3 punch. And that's what there is. I don't know.
Which is right there.
But your lethal is a non-starter for you. I mean, I don't even know why you still have it up there. I mean, I get it. We use it, but it's you've been beating your head against the wall now for at least 3 years. The wall hasn't moved.
I've been beating my head against the wall on that and the rocks, doing something with the island, and neither one, the wall has moved. So.
Well, I guess that was a question that I brought up earlier. It's like, under the current NEPA analysis, would not lethal removal, shouldn't that be included in the current NEPA analysis? Yeah, I'm trying to stay away from that because it's a horrible process.
But you have to. You have to go down that path. And what there shouldn't be is one person, if that's what it is, saying, oh, no, we can't do this. Because
it's my understanding is it's a legal interpretation of what authorized purpose is. Authorized purpose for passing fish safely, as seen in Walla Walla, they say, yes, we need to apply lethal to make sure we pass fish safely. That's part of our authorized purpose. In Portland District, the view is, no, that's not our authorized purpose. It's got nothing to do with our authorized purpose.
So we won't apply lethal.
And that's my understanding. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is that a little off?
I'm meeting with Joyce next week to talk about NEPA.
Subtle.
Okay.
But it's not NEPA, apparently. It's personal opinion.
Last I heard, it was NEPA, but you may have more recent information since you've been talking to them.
Well, it seems like if you have NEPA coverage, then you would be open.
You can generate NEPA coverage. It's not like it's something that is
magical.
Exactly. You just got to do it.
Can you just put it in the buyout and say?
Well, I think you could. NOAA could have require them. Effective hazing, and that would include potentially being able to take in the NEPA coverage required for that.
Effective hazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you could say the buyout coverage, yes.
So the other
option that we've taken with challenges like this over there is to engage our planning folks into requesting some new language in a worded document, and we found that our Office of Council issues have often resolved themselves. So I just pass that along for what it's worth. I had a couple years ago several things like that. We had three things that we specifically said, okay, you say we can't do it, we need to do it. So let's task planning, and we ask them, you know, work with them for the next WERDA, which they write these up every year when they submit a budget, you know, Water Resources Development Act, they don't often get passed every year, but that's Congress giving you new authority, you know, if they believe it has merit. Now, it's not easy to get, and obviously there's lots of politics, but it is something that can be effective in stopping to beat your head against the wall and finding the window to beat your head through.
We can do that because we have had Congress people recently approach the district asking if there's items they want in the word of, or that we want.
There you go.
Okay.
Yeah, you should try it.
Okay. All right.
What else did you want, Bob?
I have more on here. Oh, I just threw this on here people are so adamant at saying, oh, we can't shoot gulls, but it's like, look at everything we are killing, you know? So, there's plenty of other predators we're killing.
What you're talking about is the Walla Walla example, not these others, which are lethal removal in a large, you know, to reduce populations. What you're talking about is just to enforce your hazing.
Yep.
Deterrent, to make sure that deterrents are as effective as they can be. That's mm-hmm. very different. Approach in the eyes of a lot of people, including people who are against this. Because Walla Walla was able to, you guys were challenged by the Audubon
Society.
Yeah.
Yep.
And once they finally understood, you know, exactly what you were doing, it kind of backed off a bit.
It changed the program a little bit too. You know,
it's okay.
A little bit of what we saw with Pelicans this year is that our contractor will tend to come out really strong. And then when they see some of these barriers and they back off to something that's a safer path forward, which is where we're at, they're very discreet now. We don't yet have the numbers for this year. I just asked Chris about that the other day. He hasn't received them, but you know, we don't expect them to have increased necessarily. You know, what they've done is rearranged themselves over the last couple of years a little bit. We're always pretty heavy at Ice Harbor and McNary. You know, those are our spots where we do a lot of tape. Yeah. But yeah, something that sends the message is the important. So that's, I think you were here, Tammy wasn't. I mean, the other thing we talked about before you walked in, Tammy, is having somebody in Portland really dive down in the weeds and find out who owns the rocks, because our office council doesn't believe that nobody owns the rocks. And they think that the answer could come from Port, that you probably have the records, and that would open up other options for control on the rocks. And so you have at least a two-pronged feasible approach here is find out who owns it and then see what options that opens up, and then ask for some new wording in WERDA. Those are different than Gary's three options, but they're within the core options that would help with progress.
Yeah, just do your job, Tim. You guys can just be confident.
Well, I mean, I don't know who does that for you. Someone, it's someone's job.
Division doesn't even know who owns it.
Yeah, someone has, so what I heard was that somebody needs to dig through some old books, real estate stuff,
somebody,
you know.
Needs to start building a house.
Bob's right.
That's right.
I know.
That's your retirement job.
Yeah, well, I have a boat. I can do that. Yeah.
As soon as you bring the first boatload of supplies to start building that hut.
Just put a flag out there with the contact info.
Well,
your cell phone number.
Well, why a flag? Why not? So the thing, why not just an effigy, which we know will scare away the gulls? And then you'll get all kinds of people coming unglued, right? Like, oh my God, did anybody see there's a dead bird hanging in the post?
We have talked about sneaking a pig out there at night.
I think one approach would be to go back to the contractors that had access to that island to scan for PIT tags and see who they asked for permission.
Forest Service.
And if someone granted them permission, that would indicate they might own it.
I talked to them. They said they asked the Forest Service for it. Said sure, but they Forest Service goes, we don't think we own it.
Okay.
Put a for sale sign on it. Yeah, find out who owns it really quick.
Yeah, under lower prohibition, but here they are.
Yeah, I just about destroyed my boat on that.
Before they got inundated, we talked about that earlier, I asked that same question, and so that would mean is the Forest Service, if that were to be the case, but, and so the Inland Avian lead, David Trachtenberg, did work one-on-one with the Forest Service, does have a contact name and number, and I actually have an email that might have it too, and I think that would be a place to start with whomever's going to do kind of the follow-up investigation here for the Corps for Portland in terms of trying to find ownership. Because it could well be that when they did their reconnaissance or whatever action they were taking, it was based on surveys post-construction of the projects so that the pool was higher. And if you dug back further, then you would find that. Yeah, that has some merit. It's not an unlikely place.
Well, they're not going to do any of that. I mean, it's just one step in understanding who owns it. You need that.
Can get permission.
Right.
Yes.
Right, but you're still going to need a plan.
By taking no action.
And if that first doesn't pay dividends, and we're still struggling with ownership, maybe then you consider the process of non-doing claiming ownership on it. And if no one comes forward, that would create a clear path to go forward.
I thought Washington was into acquiring new property.
Well, I can ask.
Do you put a wind turbine on it?